reason. It burst in the men's room down the hall. I mean, it was hilarious. And I folded up my, or I closed my briefcase, and I thought, well, we're not going to get anything done today. And Halbert, you know, bless his soul, stood up, pushed the secretaries gently out, and closed the door, and sat back down and said, let's get to it. And I realized that's Operation Money Suck. If you are the guy who brings in the money to your business, then that's your most important job. That's your second most important job, your third most important job, and on down the line. If you're the guy who brings in the dough, that's what you got to be doing. Every hour you spend fixing the copier or being on the phone talking to the post office about some postage problem, that's an hour that robs you twice. That hour is gone, and you haven't spent an hour bringing in money. You know, if you're the guy, and especially for small businesses, if you're the writer or the guy who's doing the marketing or doing all this, the only thing that should be important to you is to stay focused on Operation Money Suck, bringing the money in. It seems simple when you hear it, but it's really the crux of business, and it's where a lot of people go wrong. They get caught up in all the flotsam and jetsam of business life. You know, my office looks like a bomb went off in here. I got stacks of stuff that have been there for a year. There's dust settling. I don't let the maids in here, and I don't let hardly anybody else in here. This is my workspace, and I like clutter because I like the discovery of seeing, hey, what's in that pile over there. But you know, that's I'm always, you know, I don't waste a lot of time trying to keep my desk clean. You know, it's not important to me, and in fact, it gets pushed back farther every day because there's always, especially in my life, there's always another thing I can do to you know, that involves Operation Money Suck as opposed to just dusting off my my desk.
Well, internet marketers are not immune to this because a lot of people especially the people who complain a lot are usually the people who they like to browse forums and posts and read forums and read email and download email and email their friends. And
Michael, let's be honest. The web is like junk. It's like heroin. There is so much to be done. It's you know, you kind of scratch the surface if you, you know, and then you can go a little deeper, and then God forbid you discover pornography or something. I mean, it's just, you know, guys are gambling. I mean, it's horrible for people who have gambling addictions. I mean, I guess people pass out from hunger. They just won't leave the computer console. So we, as a species, we don't know yet how to deal with what the web hath wrought in our lives. But we're learning as we go along. And one of the things you have to learn is if you want to be a top businessman, or hell, not even a top business, if you want to make it in business on any level at all, you have to exert a little bit of discipline. And this is, you know, there's a common story in Hollywood about it usually takes place in the front lines of World War II or World War I or the Civil War or something. What happens is that a guy is a private, and he's bitching and moaning about the sergeants and the lieutenants and stuff because they're always telling him to do stuff. And the privates all get together, and they all think that they know better than the guys who are running the war. And then what happens is somebody gets shot or something. Suddenly one private is plucked out of the crowd, and suddenly he's put in a position of authority. And the crux of the story is that splash of cold water in your face when you're no longer one of the guys. You are now the guy making the decisions, and you're responsible for the bottom line.
Right.
When you do your business, a lot of people don't understand this. A lot of people don't understand the responsibility and the concept and the whole idea of consequences. You know, that if you decide to not work today, there will be consequences tomorrow. If you decide to work today and do A, B, and C, there will be consequences maybe later that evening. And, you know, you can't not take responsibility for everything you do and be, you know, in command of your business. And this it doesn't matter what part of the business you're in either. You've got to be responsible for that thing. This is a huge shock to most people.
Oh, yeah. And you know, the thing is, especially with whenever we were talking about the hook, the internet, I'd say, of course, the internet is just a medium, but people understand that whenever you're selling your product, your widget, and you've got this long copy sales letter, if you don't hit them in the face with your headline right up front, they're probably, you know, downloading a gazillion emails on one side. They've got about, you know, two or three, four or five different browser windows opened up. They're checking Google here. They're doing a whole bunch of stuff. And just as much as you need to sort of focus on Operation Money Suck, you also have to focus on the hook that will grab those people into your copy.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, that gets back to salesmanship, the theme of what we were talking about. Most people write from their heels. And the reason, and when I say you write from your heels, it's like you're saying, I've got this. Would you please, you know, maybe take a look at it? Maybe if you're not doing anything else, you know, if you're busy, I'll come back later. You know, that kind of thing.
Windy.
You've got one
yeah.
foot
Windy.
Out the door already. You can't do that. You got to be bold. You got to be that person who stands up and says, hey, I got something you want. Here it is. Here's how to get it, blah, blah, blah. And this gets back to salesmanship. This gets back to making that bold statement and getting back to that responsibility thing. When you are responsible for making the sale, whether you're just the writer or whether you're the marketer, whether you're the guy who's running the business, or whether you're all three, which I have a sneaking suspicion most of the people on the line are, then that's your responsibility, is to stand up and make the damn sale. You have to ask for action. I think I talked about the six stages of a basic sales pitch. I'll rattle those off so I make sure that I cover everything I do. You know, I say this over and over again to people, and it's so simple, it kind of flies right past. But listen to this. This is like the most simple checklist you're ever going to have. When you're thinking about how you're going to write your letter, here's how you do it. You say, here's what I've got. Here's what it can do for you. Here's why I'm the go-to guy that you should be dealing with. Here's the story of the whole thing. Here are the details. Here's how you can get it. It's so simple. It's so straightforward. That is pretty much how most world-class sales pitches operate. Then you start figuring out. Then once you you can just get that down, that idea down, answer those particular well, they're not questions, but you know, fill in those blanks. Then you go back and you figure out the passion. Then you put yourself into the head of the person you're talking to. You figure out where their passionate sweet spot is. And then it's a lot easier to figure out what the hook is to get them into that. Because you start thinking about the benefits that you're going to give, you know, and then the USP comes about from the juxtaposition of the benefits of your product and what the guy needs, how that fits together. That's your unique, you know, sales position. And then you establish your credibility. Then you get to bullets and you start teasing and riling them up. And then you offer to relieve the discomfort you've created with the best offer you can come up with. And really, it doesn't get any more complex than that.
That's perfect. That's actually well said. I was once asked...
I get paid for that, Michael.
I was once asked, you know, what are the five questions you should answer with your copy? I was at a seminar somewhere,
uh-huh.
And my friend Peter Stone, who's actually the producer of this call,
right.
He was there. And the question was, what are the five questions? And I said, why? And the person said, well, can you elaborate? I said, why me? Why you? Why this, meaning why this product? Why now? And why at this price?
I like it.
Meaning, why me? Meaning, why should you listen to me? Because, I mean, the worst thing, and you said this, John, in your newsletter so much, is the worst enemy of the copywriter is a reader that says, so what?
Right.
Then why you? Meaning, why you, Mr. Prospect, should read this? Why is this important to you? And there's a qualification process just as much as you would do in selling when you're knocking on doors selling encyclopedias as much as you do in copywriting. Then why this, meaning why this product? Why is it so meaningful to you? Why now, using scarcity and like you were talking about how to get them into a lather and to a point where they can't say no? And then why at this price, the value build up in the bullets and all those things that go into the sale?
That's right. You know, that also reminds me, the biggest blunder that rookies make, when I was listening to you talk just now, it's something... The biggest mistake, of course, that most people make is that they bore people. I mean, they write boring copy, and they just and it's, you know, if you don't have any, you know, you have to hook into your own passionate sweet spot too. But the one problem that people make when they aren't natural salesmen and they think they've woken their salesman up, but they really haven't, is they try to bully the reader into buying, and that's not salesmanship. Salesmanship is about persuasion. It's not over the top stuff, and people get really confused. And I have to clarify that with people all the time, because they look at my copy and think, "Wow, that's really balls to the wall, and I got to be really aggressive and just knock them over." That's not it at all. What I'm doing is very careful persuasion, and I'm staying in the emotional sweet spot of the person I'm writing to. And when I say I said emotional sweet spot that time, passion and emotion, that irrational side of the person, because almost all purchasing decisions are made irrationally. We have Mark Twain said there are two reasons why a man buys anything. The reason he'll tell you he bought it, and then there's the real reason. And that's very important to understand when you're selling stuff, because the real reason that people want it often isn't even known to them. But the act of getting someone to open their wallet and give you money is the hardest thing to do in business. And yet that is the beginning and end of a successful business.
Gosh, that just hits me with something that you taught in the past, and I'm sure you teach it now still, that I've mentioned on the call with Gary Halbert. And this is the problem I get a lot when I critique copy, for example, is that a small business, a small company, sometimes a one-man operation, will want to write copy like Walmart and Microsoft with this third-person highfalutin corporate speak.
Right.
And I mentioned on the call before this that I think the best kind of copy is just the guy you meet at the bar. You sit down and you, "Guy, I got to tell you about this thing that I, blah blah blah."
Right.
That is, it's like the just you and me talking kind of thing that you talk about a lot, John.
Right. The best kind of writing that's done is I call it just you and me. I think there was an official term back in the 20s called I and thou copy. But basically, what it is write like you would talk if you could edit how you. What you've said after you've spoken. So and of course I like to take it down to the idea of being in a bar where you just overhear somebody mention something to somebody else, and what he meant, the problem that he complains about, is exactly what your product solves. What would you say to the guy? How would you introduce yourself? Would you say 95% of people with hemorrhoids, find that, you don't do this kind of stuff. You're talking to another human being. A lot of people make the mistake when they're writing on the web, or they're writing a letter, or they're writing something. They think they're writing to this huge audience. They're not. It's just you and the reader. Now, there's a lot of readers out there, but each time, it's one reader. It's you and one person, just the two of you. So it's just you and me sitting down and talking about a shared passion. And that's, just understanding that, getting that down. And, it's what's funny is that I was just interviewing somebody for an ad, and he had these really blasé corporate-sounding ads and stuff. And I asked him I had a list of questions to ask him, but I never got to question number two, because question number one was, hey, if you were sitting down at a bar and I sat down next to you and you overheard me say, hey, I have this problem, and I didn't even finish my question. He said, here's what I tell you. He went on for 30 minutes. And it was the most brilliant stuff that I've ever heard. It was a great sales pitch. It was full of persuasion. It was full of emotional little check things that made the back of the hair on the back of my head stand up, because he was hitting me smack between the eyes. It was like, do you have enough money? Is money going to be a problem? Are you how does it feel to be 48 or something and not have enough money to be able to spend $100 for something you really want,
mm-hmm.
and things like that? And it was just, and I said, have you ever just recorded this and transcribed it and sent it out as a release? He says, well, no, nobody wants to hear this stuff. Well, guess what? Everybody wants to hear that, and that's the kind of stuff that works really well. It gets around to what I call the voice. When reading is a passive behavior, be very, very aware of that. It's not an active behavior on the reader's part. When you hook somebody and bring them in, you want a voice that is going to join the conversation already in their head. So you want to be a voice, not some printed matter down there. You want to be a voice on the page, because unconsciously he's going to be absorbing what you're saying. However, you are not letting him stay unconscious in this. You are not letting him stay submissive in this. You are building enough tension in him by teasing the bejesus out of him, so that when it gets down to the offer, if he puts your letter aside or goes off of your website or puts your DVD aside or whatever, he'll wake up in the middle of the night and just go, God damn it! And he'll get up and he'll have to dial, because he has to know the answers to the stuff you teased him about, or he has to have that product to see if it's for real.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal of the whole thing. And you can't do that meekly. That's why I write a little bit aggressively, but, you know, I don't bully. I don't go over the top. I go just under the top. I get attention, and I want to, you know, I'm always aiming towards riling them up on the inside, because you don't want them to be comfortable. You want them to be very uncomfortable reading this ad, because you are, it's kind of like that Roberta Flack song of, you know, telling my story, what the hell is that? Oh, well, shouldn't bring it
Killing
up.
Me Softly?
Yeah, Killing Me Softly. Killing Me Softly. That's the whole idea. This person goes and listens to somebody sing, and they realize, and they think they're singing about them, and it's to the point that they think people are looking at them in the room. That's what you want. You want to get so deep into the psyche of the person you're writing to. Now, what does that mean you have to do? Part of your sales detection? Okay, people understand the idea of doing sales detective work on the product. Guess what? You got to do it on your customer too, on your prospect rather. You got to understand that guy as well as you understand anybody else in your life. What moves them? What makes them tick? What makes them happy? What makes them sad?
Mm-hmm.
And especially, what makes them whip out the wallet and buy stuff? It's often not what you think it is. Common sense doesn't exist. If people relied on common sense to become wealthy, then everyone you know who thinks they have common sense would be wealthy. Are they?
Right, right. It's like the thing in salesmanship and in sales training where they say that wimpy salespeople have skinny kids.
That's funny. I like that. Wimpy salespeople. Well, you don't have to be the big, I've said this before 100 times too, you don't have to be the big handsome guy who comes in and bowls everybody over with your charisma and stuff. You can be the schleppy little mutt, and often that's the guy who's the best salesman. You know, Dave Thomas of Wendy's was the greatest example. I wrote about that in my last newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
He was so boring and so dull and so doughy and so nothing that the ad agency hated him because they couldn't win any awards when they had him. Every
right.
time they took him out, sales would plummet. They had to put him back in. Now they're putting him in posthumously since he's dead.
Right.
I mean, they need the guy's mojo. So you don't have to be something that you're uncomfortable with. Guess what? When you share a passion with an audience, what you're comfortable with is what they're comfortable with.
Very often whenever I write copy, I have a questionnaire, but that always is the, like you were mentioning about the one reason, and then there's the real reason. And I always get all this stuff that's really not what I really want. So what I do is often I using the power of technology, we were talking about technology earlier, is I would three-way the call with a transcription service. And I just, you know, I'll probably ask just a few questions to let them talk a little bit about their copy or about their product. But they'll always say a few things about, oh, yeah, we've been in business since 1985, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But then they get to tell me some little stories. And oh, yeah, that's interesting. Tell me more about that. And then they just go off in this big passionate blob, you know, and then let them spill all their guts.
Right.
And then I record that, and I get this transcribed, and half of my copy is written right there.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, because you tapped into the passionate sweet spot. You tapped into that conversation already going on in their head.
Exactly. Well, this is something that sort of ties in with the next point I want to bring up, and it's a point that we've covered in a previous call, but it's something that I keep getting all the time anyways, and I thought that you would be the perfect person to ask, is this issue of writer's block.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think it would be some of the tools and tactics that people can use in order to either avoid or remove writer's block?
Yeah, I'm sorry. My mind just went blank while you were talking to me.
Speaker's block.
Yeah, speaker's block. No, so many people that I work with who want to be writers, you know, here is the most common problem, and this is more common in like the novel side, people trying to write literature, than it is in, well, it's probably the same though. Most people think they want to be a writer, but the truth is they don't want to be a writer. They want to have already written something and be enjoying the rewards of their labor. When you become a writer, you really have to learn to either love or hate, but at least feel strongly about the whole process. And this is where Operation Money Suck comes in, because sometimes people sit down and they go, it's like you're staring down the blank screen. It used to be staring down the blank page, but now everybody's working on computers. So you're staring at a blank screen, essentially. You know, you got that square there on the Microsoft window, and how do you write the first word? How do you get the stuff down? As Howard mentioned in the last call, there are tricks like just sitting down and writing down the bullets of everything. And the bullets means basically you say, well, let's just do a feature benefit thing. And what that does is that gets you writing, that gets you started. And what's easy to do, or should be easy to do, is the feature benefit thing. Just write it down. Now, we should all know what the feature benefit thing is, but I'll explain it in a minute. But basically, if you don't know it, then you haven't got enough research to write anything anyway, so you shouldn't be sitting down staring at the blank screen. You should be on the horn talking to somebody, or you should be reading something or doing something to hitting the streets to find out what the features and benefits are of the thing you're trying to sell. A feature is the physical property of the thing, how big it is, how much of it there is, what it looks like, the color, things like that. The benefit is what the feature does for the person using it. And this gets back to one of the biggest mistakes that rookies make when they try to sell. They confuse their product with their product. Guess what? If you're selling a 5 CD, 15 DVD, 4 manuals, personal teaching course or something like that, that ain't your product. That is merely the vehicle with which you have decided to deliver the wonderful stuff that you have, the information that you have. Your product is what all those things do for the person. So your product really is what you are delivering. And in a lot of cases, it's a better life, it's more money, it's respect, it's a better position in your market, whatever. But what you offer is the benefit to the person, not the physical aspects of it. So by sitting down, staring at the blank screen, you should be able to sit down and say, well, let's map this sucker out. What are the physical parameters of the thing I'm trying to sell? That would be the features. Then you list all those. Hopefully you have a lot of them. Maybe you have 6. Maybe you have a dozen. Maybe you have 500. It doesn't matter. Just exhaustively write all those down. Well, it goes really fast. It looks really cool. It comes in 6 different colors. It comes in 8 different shapes. It blah blah blah. Whatever. You can get it in CD or cassette. Then go back to each of those and assign each of those a benefit. This is the simplest thing to do, and this will start to kick in your inner salesman, who for most of us is fast asleep and has been asleep your entire life. You know what's interesting about salesmanship, Michael, is that most people sit down and try to be the salesman in their business, and that's what you are if you're doing the writing. You are the top salesman. They try to do it, and they don't even have the chops to be able to convince a friend to go see a movie that the friend would enjoy.
Exactly.
And, what's the first thing most people do when they try to, if I tell people, okay, go see a movie, now go sell somebody on seeing that movie, what's the first thing they try to do? Hey, you really got to go see this movie. You would really like it. Blah, 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 do this. What does that do? That sets up almost all the time. It sets up resistance in the person hearing it. They think, I'll make up my own mind about this. Maybe I won't. They wind up not seeing it. They wind up not doing it.
Right.
If they hear it from a third party or something, then it's their own discovery, And this all gets back to the whole idea of bringing in third-party endorsements, with testimonials and things. But, if you can't do basic salesmanship in your life, you're not going to do it to a stranger when you're asking them for money. If you can't get, somebody who loves you to do a simple task for you, you're not going to get a stranger to pull out $100 and send it over for something he can't see, feel, hold, heft, or taste. So by getting the features down of the thing and then getting to the benefits, what you do is you are mapping out the entire psychological profile of the product, which is, and especially the benefits. That's going to be the most important part. What does the thing do for the person using it? And that means you've got to get into the mind of the user. You've got to be a user yourself. You've got to understand all of the ways that people get benefit out of this thing. And really, that's, so that when you sit down to write, maybe you're still staring at the blank screen. Then what you do is, I work off of notes anyway. I like these little 5x7 notepads. I've got stacks of them all over the office because they contain about one thought, enough writing for one thought. And I like to get all those thoughts down. It's like, think about what the USP is. So what is the unique sales position? And then, write down, who is the competition? What are they doing? What are they offering? What are their benefits? And you know how you find that out? hey, you go to their website, or you get their, you get on their list, or you go look at their ads, and you find out what they're doing, and then you write down all that stuff, and then you get that, and you say, well, where's the niche in here, and where's the, and all of this start, you know, it sounds like work, but it's really not. It should be fun, because if you're doing it for your own business, guess what you're doing? You are doing Operation Money Suck. You are building the foundation for wealth beyond your wildest dreams. If you're doing it for a client, then you should also be doing it, you know, you should also be focused on the wealth that's going to come in, because you, if you're, when you get to be a good writer, you should be tied into a piece of the action anyway.
Well, John, this is something that I've learned from you that I usually say to my clients is this thing that you talked about. I think I heard you say this at a seminar sometime, is a really good way to dig deeper into benefits is to always, whenever you mention a benefit or what you think a benefit is you end up asking this one question at the end. What this means to you, Mr. Prospect, is this.
Right.
And this is the way I explain it, and you tell me, John, if I got this right. But what I usually tell my clients is, sometimes people, when they say what a benefit is, I usually tell them it's not a benefit, it's an advantage. There's a difference between features, advantages, and benefits, and what I mean is this. A feature is what a product has. An advantage is what it does. But a benefit, a real, true benefit, is what that feature means to the prospect. And here's a great example. I'll tell you a story. This lady comes up to me, and she had a website selling this cream, facial cream. And she called it, like, I don't know, microdermabrasion, which is a cream that helps to reduce wrinkles. Well,
right.
She had on her website these features. She had it reduces wrinkles. It comes in an easy-to-use home care kit. It's pH balanced and all that stuff. And I told her those are just features. Then I said, take a 3x5 card, put in, you know, create three columns, put your features down in one column. Now in the second column, I want you to tell me what you think are benefits. And she wrote down, like, well, because it reduces wrinkles, therefore it makes you look younger, and because it comes in a home care kit, it's easy to use at home.
Sure.
And the third one is it's pH balanced, so it's gentle on your skin. I said, okay, those really are advantages. And I used your technique about, so what this means to you. And I said, in the third column, what's the ultimate end result, the ultimate benefit that people can pull from it? Well, she said, well, if it makes you look younger, that means you'll be more attractive, you'll get that promotion at work, you'll feel more confident, nobody will guess your age, you'll fall in love all over again, or you'll be able to attract that person that you've been eyeing on. The second one was, since it's easy to use at home, you don't have to be embarrassed by going to a doctor's office, you don't have to waste time. You know, it's like a facelift in a jar in the comfort and privacy of your own home.
Right.
And the third one was, it's gentle on your skin. Well, she said, well, you know, there are no risks, no pain, no healing periods like those harsh chemical peels that people usually get or surgeries. I said, aha, those are benefits. Am I on the right track?
Absolutely. What was I going to say? I was thinking about the facelift in a jar thing, the whole thing. Often what you will find when they start talking about benefits, and I like the way you broke it down, because a lot of people that read a book on copywriting come away with weak benefits, and you call them advantages, and I like that. It should be set apart like that, because the real benefits dig really deep. They touch on the emotional and passionate sweet spot of the person using it.
Yeah, the benefit within the benefit.
Pardon me?
What you teach, the benefit within the benefit.
Right, right. And so when you're thinking about that, you will often be astonished at some of the benefits that come about. Like you mentioned, not having to go into a doctor's office. Now, I don't know, but from my experience, I would bet that that's huge. But I would want to find out. I wouldn't guess, because I don't use that kind of product. I don't need to, and I think it's mostly a female or a product that women use. So if I'm not sure about that, I will double check and I will try to find out. If you have somebody who understands it, like this woman, it sounds like this woman did, because she probably also got into it because she was using the product or needed the product or was frustrated because this product didn't exist, so she created one. When you start doing that, often she will be astonished, too, at what some of the benefits that she comes up with. Like that thing about, you know, you won't have to go into the doctor's office, or people will be unable to guess your age. I know that when people get older, one of the things that they really get happy about is when somebody seriously underestimates how old they are.
Right.
You know, it makes them beam. So that's something. One of the big, you know, I talk about dirty motivations, too. Never underestimate. And in fact, I was going to talk about this, the whole jungle thing. You know, one of the problems that people have when they write is they have an unrealistic idea of who their audience is.
Mm-hmm.
People, it's okay. Okay, when you become a true salesman, your life is going to be different forever. You are never going to be able to look at anybody else the same because you're going to have to get into the psychology of people. When you do, when you understand what the basic things that move people are, you're going to find out that most people really get motivated by greed, by lust, by the desire to have something, you know, something to lord over somebody. One of the greatest advantages I've ever found that I try to work in a lot is, you know, your neighbors and your buddies are going to hate you